Okay, so one of the dangers of finding a chabura early in the week is sometimes like you spend the whole week saying I have it, that at the last minute you're still like pulling it together. So last Shabbos I found this and I was like awesome. I was like really excited. I was like I'm not gonna spend the week with the anxiety of what are we gonna learn, and then all week long I was like no, we're gonna make this work. And then at 7:30 last night I was like okay, we definitely have to make this work. So I want to share with you a question that I found that was bothering me, and thank God not only me, but Rabbi Riskin and Rabbi Rasner also, and kind of we'll see where that goes. So Yaakov Avinu has no idea what's going on, but the brothers have all like discussed it and they've done their thing back in Egypt. And at the very end, so Yosef gives them, or Paro gives him rather, some instructions. So we'll start from his instructions in Pasuk Yud Tet. Vatatzu, this is mid speech. Vatatzu veit azot asu, kulachem mi eretz mitzrayim agalot lutabchem, lun sheichem, unestatem et avichem uvatem. So he says, and now I command you to do this. Take from eretz mitzrayim agalot. You can take wagons from Egypt for your children, for your wives, and you'll carry your father down here and you will come. So Paro is basically saying it's time to relocate. I don't want you living in Canaan. I want you to come down to Egypt and no worries about expenses. I'm sending you the finest moving wagons in Egypt. Come on down. Veinchem al tachos al kleichem, and don't worry about your pots and pans. Ki tu kol eretz Mitzrayim lachem hu. We'll take care of you in Egypt. The finest of Egypt will be here for you. And the Jews do that, and Yosef gives them agalot based on the mouth or the word of Paro, and he gives them tzeda l'aderech. He gives them food for the way, right? That's the expression that we still use ad hayom hazeh. When you're sending someone off, you send them with tzeda l'aderech, food for the walk, food for the journey. L'chulam natan le'ish chalifot smalot, so he gives everyone clothing. L'vinyamin natan shlosh me'o kesef v'chamesh chalifot smalot. Everybody gets a change of clothing, and Binyamin gets 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of clothing. So the psukim seem to be pretty like compact. This is what you have to do. Take these agalot. So the first question is, what is the purpose of the agalot? Are they just moving wagons and therefore, and probably pricey ones? So, you know, imagine if you were relocating and your company, you know, calls up and says, hey, listen, we're sending a bunch of moving trucks. So it's on us. So this way you could move quickly. So you'd appreciate it, right? That's a great perk. So is it just that Paro is saying, listen, I want you to get down quickly. I don't want you to be sitting in Canaan wondering, should we take this? Should we not take this? Should we do a yard sale? Who's going to be our shipping company? I'm just sending you with these wagons. Just make it happen and make it happen quickly. Or is there more to the wagons than just that? And then the second question is, which is completely off topic, but nonetheless is a good question, is, What's up with the changes of clothing, and why does he give Binyamin 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of clothing as opposed to 1 change of clothing? So the change of clothing, it seems like most of the Mepharshim say that Yosef felt guilty. He felt guilty because through the elaborate scheme that he set up against his brothers, what ended up happening was Yosef forced them to tear Kriya. So after they tore Kriya, their clothing was ripped. And then the only way to, he felt guilty about it. So he says, all right, I'm going to reimburse you by giving you new clothing. So that's why the clothing. Why does Binyamin get 300 pieces of silver? And why 5 sets of clothing? So some of them of Varshim, I don't remember who, answer that the Chamesh Chalifot Smalot is actually it's a bracha or it's a hope. And what do they get? They get, this actually happens symbolically with Mordechai, who wears fancy special clothing later on. Okay.
Part 5.
I'm saying I believe it's five. I think whichever Mefarash it is, says that there are five sets of clothing that he wears.
Right back to
him. Okay, so that's a possibility. So let's take a look at the Chizkuni. The Chizkuni says, Chalifot smalot, chalukim u'michnasayim, he gives them pants and a shirt. Shederach b'nei adam l'achlif, v'dome lo ish, ki hisim lo hisim l'tor l'oro, zahaluk hatafel l'oro. It's the piece of clothing that is goes near the skin. V'yesh omrim albushe v'gadim. So that, like, it seems like the first one is more like an undergarment. V'yesh omrim malbushe v'gadim l'fisha garlam shakar b'gdeyim. Shelo kedin kishetziv l'teit agaviyah v'yam tacha bin yamin. So there's another possibility, says the Chizkuni, that the clothing that they get is clothing that, because they tore kriya without, for no reason, because of the gavia b'yamtacha b'nyamin b'nishbayishu al shayu kruay b'gadim, and they were embarrassed that their clothing was ripped. Ulu b'nyamin al yidei shelo ayav b'mechirato natan shlosh meo kesef, but b'nyamin, because he was not involved in the sale, he gets 300 pieces of silver. Aval, say again. Yeah, that's what it seems like.
Oh, he abstained.
Right. I mean, he wasn't even there, right? So what's up with that? So one possibility that I believe I heard in a long time ago, which I guess I've quoted before, but once I saw this answer, I felt a little bit better, was that this was actually a continuation of Yosef's test to see if the brothers had really done tshuva. So by favoring Binyamin, by giving Binyamin this extra silver, by giving Binyamin five times the amount of clothing, what he was really trying to say to them was, let's see, have you gotten over your jealousy? Jealousy specifically when it comes to clothing. So it's a nice pshat, but really at this point in time, like, Yosef has put the brothers through, like, quite a bit. And they've come, it's come really, really clear that they will do anything to save Binyamin. So it seems unlikely that that's, you know, the answer. Now, Yosef, I think when he eats the meal with the brothers, he does give he gives Binyamin special food there and more food there, something like that. There I could understand that he's testing the brothers, because he has no idea what's going to happen. But after everything he's been through, it seems unlikely that this is a continuation of the test. So the Chizkuni and many others offer a different explanation. They say that Binyamin got the 300 silver pieces because he wasn't part of the sale. Okay, so what does that mean? You know, to Shmuel's point, Aval Sharachav Shemacharuhu Lo Natan Kidei Liknos Kol Echad Asara Yadot Yoter Mi Dimei Evet. So the other brothers that were involved in the sale, they don't get it as a punishment. There is a knas that's imposed upon a person if they sell their servant. Kmo shamru rotenu begitten perak hasholeach hamocher avdo leovei kochavim konsen oto anasar b'demav. So the Gemara in Gittin says that if you sell your servant to a non-Jew, so your punishment is, or your fine is, until 10 times the value. Vashlosh meot kesef heim eser yadot midmei eved k'tiv parasha mishpatim kesef shloshim shkalim yiten ladun. If a servant is sold or killed or whatever, they're sold for 30 pieces of silver. So the knas of selling them is up to 10, to a non-Jew is up to 10 times, and therefore Binyamin, for not being part in the sale, he gets 300 pieces of silver, which essentially says to the other brothers, because you were involved in the sale, you're punished that you don't get that. So
what did they sell Yosef for?
So they sold, or it's interesting, they sold him for 20 pieces of silver. There is an interesting question why they sell it for 20 as opposed to 30. I don't remember where I saw this a long time ago when I was doing one of these topics of how the times that the Torah were written in impact the things in it. So someone wrote that when a slave was sold in the times of giving of the Torah, the amount that they were given was 30 pieces of shekel. right? That was the value of a slave. And the argument, and I think it's like based, I think they saw it in Hammurabi's code or something like that. So like a contemporary source had 30, or maybe it was after that. But the idea was that perhaps inflation, that when Yosef was sold, the value of a slave was 20. And when the Torah was written 210 years later or so, 230 years later, they were the inflation was then 30 pieces of silver.
Then I should have given 200 based on those, on that thought process.
Yeah, I hear. So that's going to be like a little bit of like a challenge. So I guess if you, you know, like that, your question is a good one. And I think the question in general is far better than the answer anyway. But I think the Chizkuni's answer at least is that there's a knas that you get for selling your servant. They sold Yosef, and therefore they lose out on that. So they, Binyamin gets it, and by giving it to Binyamin as opposed to them, the subtle message is that they did something wrong, and they're fined accordingly. Okay, so we're still stuck with the agalot. So pasuk chav gimul, aviv shalach kazot asaracham orim nosim etuv mitzrayim. To their father, they sent 10 donkeys laden with the best of Egypt. The eser atonot noso bar v'lechem, and then another 10 donkeys that were full of food for their father and for the road. V'shalach et lechav eileichu v'yom aleim al terguzu badarech. So he sends his brothers, and they go. And he says to them, don't fight along the way. So Rashi says, what's al tirgezu b'derech? So either don't fight about whose responsibility it is that I was sold, which obviously is something that can happen after all that they've been through. And certainly he had overheard Reuven talking from jail and blaming the brothers. He says, like, let's just move past this. Al tirgezu b'derech. And the other one is, that don't get involved in like deep conversations of Torah along the way. You're likely to get sidetracked. So I'll tell you, 2 weeks ago, it was Erev Shabbos, and I don't know, they play Little League on Friday afternoon here, which would be really nice if it was like West Hempstead, where you play like at Cornwell or Chestnut, and it's like 2 minutes from your house. So Ozzy has Little League on Friday, and he played a game near Shalavim. So it's like about a 35-minute drive back here to Ramat Beit Shemesh. The game ended at like 3, got in the car like at 3:02, and like Waze said to us, like if all goes well, like we're going to get back to Ramat Beit Shemesh at 3:35 when Shabbos starts at like, I don't know, 4:20. So I was like, okay, it's going to be a little bit tight, but we can make it. And even though it's really not very hard, I did use Waze just to make sure I knew where I was going. And fine, I had directions, and then I shut off Waze. I was like, I'm all good. So if you're coming from Tel Aviv to go to Beit Shemesh, you're on the 1, the big highway. And if you stay on the 1, you end up going to Yerushalayim. And if you get off the 1 and go on the 38, so then you go to Beit Shemesh. Not very complicated. So Ozzy and I were in the middle of a very deep conversation. His team had lost. They gave up 5 runs in the last inning. And then Ozzy made the last out of the game. So like all in all, it was like a bad day. Thank God he wasn't the pitcher that gave up the 5 runs, because then like whatever. So we're having like this long conversation, and we're like really engrossed in our conversation. And all of a sudden I look up, I'm like, oh shoot, I missed the cutoff to 38. So I quickly put on Waze, because I'm like, how does, like, what happens next? And so it turns out that there are not a lot of exits on the 1. So like from, if you miss Beit Shemesh, the next one is Beit Meir by OJ. Just like a good like 7 minutes past it. So normally, and it's not the first time that I've missed my exit. I've gone to Tel Aviv the other way once or twice already. But on Erev Shabbos, it's like a little bit tight. So we ended up getting back at 3:50, not 3:35. And we just made it. But al tirgezu b'darech, right? When you're like very much engrossed in a conversation along the way, so it happens. You sometimes sometimes lose where you are, end up in the wrong neighborhoods. Yosef tells them, like, just don't do that. Like, just have light conversations and get home. Pasuk Chaf Hey, good news is Vayalu Mitzrayim, they do go home from Egypt, and Vayavo Eretz Canaan El Yaakov Avim, they arrive by their father. Vayigidu lo lemor O Yosef Chai v'chihu Moshel v'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. So they tell their dad Yosef is still alive and he's the leader of Egypt. Vayafag libo kilo amin lahem. So his heart stopped because he didn't believe them. So what didn't he believe? Is it that he didn't believe that Yosef Chai, that Yosef is alive? Does Yosef Chai mean something different than just the fact that Yosef is alive? Or does he not believe V'chihu Moshel V'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, that he is the leader of Egypt? And he recounts everything that Yosef had told them. And he shows the agalot asher shalach Yosef, that Yosef had sent them, but to carry him. Ruach Yaakov avihem, and Yaakov felt better. His spirit came back. Vayomer Yisrael, Ravo Yosef ben Ichai. So Yisrael says, no, let's go, quickly. Yosef is still alive. I want to see him before I die. Okay. So what's with the agalot? We've only learned tonight like 10 psukim. And in the 10 psukim, we've spoken about the agalot 3 times. So what's up with the agalot? And second of all, is Pasuk of Zion really true? Vayaret agalot asher shalach Yosef laseito to. He saw, right, and he saw the agalot that Yosef sent for him. But it's not true. Who sent the agalot? Paro sent it. So why does it say that Yosef sent them? So let's take a look at Rashi. This is probably the most famous answer about the agalot. Rashi says they called it Rei Yosef. Siman masar lahem b'mahaya osei kishaparash mimenu. There is a, he sends a message, a sign to his father of what they had learned last. The parashat Egla Arufa. The last time that they had spoken, they learned the parasha of Egla Arufa. Now you have to assume that the last time that they had spoken is when? It's right before Yosef is sent to the brothers in Shechem to check on them. So it's a little curious, right? Your dad is giving you like a vart that he wants to tell you as he's sending you on this dangerous mission to check on your brothers in a dangerous city. And he teaches you the parsha of Egla Rufa. So what's Egla Rufa? Just like Al Regal Achat, is that if they find a dead body in the middle of like some uninhabited area, the Sanhedrin would come, they would measure it to the nearest city, and the Beis Din would then come, kill an agala, kill an eagle rather, a young calf in the dry like desert area, and they would spill its blood and say, just as this blood was spilled, Yadenu lo shafu, we are not responsible for the blood that was spilled of this person that was traveling here. And so that's how they feel, that's how they kind of wash their hands of the matter. And of course, the Gemara says, what, like, why would anybody think that Beis Din is the one that's responsible for it? So the city is saying, we might be responsible because we didn't properly take care of this person, so we asked for mechila. So that's actually a pretty crazy thing to teach your son before you send him on a mission that in the end appears to be a suicide mission. When Yosef wakes up and realizes that he's in the boar and then eventually ends up in Egypt, he sits there and says, God, was my father trying to send me a message when he taught me Egla Arufa? Like, maybe dad is responsible for this. So Yosef sends his father back this message saying, I remember it. Vayaret agalot asher shalach Yosef. It's not the agalot, but it's the message of what the agalot are that tells them what it is. Now, it's a little bit of a stretch because agala is a wagon. Egla arufa is a calf. So it's not the same word. So like here, it's like a play of words. I don't know, like, what if his dad had taught him a different, like, piece of Torah? What if he had to seek out the entire kingdom for something that, like, you know, sounds like it? I don't know, like, if he would have learned tzitzis as the last thing, would he have looked for, you know, tzitzin, like, certain, like, stringy things and sent it to his father? So, okay, look, wordplay, dad, right? So that's the problem with Rashi. Again, I think it's definitely the pshat that we're most familiar with, but is that really like what happened? So Rabbi Riskin says, what's Yosef actually saying? What's Rashi saying? Perhaps Yosef is saying, Dad, I know you might have been partially to blame for my sale, but 22 years of Avelus is enough. From what I've heard from my brothers, it's enough for you to get absolved. So I forgive you, right? I'm mochel on anything you did to me, and that's it. Okay, so that's an answer. A second answer is the Chizkuni. So the Chizkuni says, he asks a question back in Vayeshev. Vayishlachayu me'emek Chevron. When Yosef is sent off, it says that Yaakov sent him me'emek Chevron, from the valley of Chevron. So if you've ever been to Chevron, one thing we know is that Chevron is not a valley. Chevron is in the mountains. So he says, me'emek Chevron, ha'ir yoshevet bahar. The mountain, the city is on a mountain. V'yakov livahu ad ha'emek. It's a great pshat. What does it mean by Yishlachayu me'emek Chevron? Yosef is actually accompanied by his dad from the city, down the mountain or up the mountain, depending on which way he's going, ad ha'emek, until the valley. And when he sends him, he's sending him from the emek. V'chein amru rabotenu sheliva Yaakov liYosef v'ayu asukim v'parashat egla rufa misham shalchu. So he sends him off. And if you're sending someone off, what would be the only Torah parasha to teach them? The mitzvah of Egla Rufa. Okay, fine. So that is another possible answer. I think the Netziv has a great answer that is so simple. But he says, Torah Rav Kazeh in Lachush L'Sheker. If you're going to lie to someone, there's a lot. Yeah, sorry, Greg.
Wasn't the reason they did the calf was because they're saying that we did escort this person part of the way towards their journey, which is what they say is their responsibility. And if that is true, he did not. He did not get anywhere with Yosef.
So according to the Chizkuni, he would have done it partially, meaning he escorts him to the outskirts of Chevron. So that's like, you know, he's living in Chevron and he sends him there. But I'm opening up quickly to the parish of Egla Rufa, because I don't know if they actually say that we really escorted him. I think part of the problem is that they're saying we're probably liable because we didn't sufficiently take care of this person.
I thought that's where we got the Minhag of after when they Shabbos company leaves, they walk them partially way down the block. Is from that.
So. I it's not in the psukim, but I would have to look. I could be that you're right that they say that they partially, but they should have done more. I hear, but I guess according to the Chizkuni, that's not a problem because he did, you know, accompany him part of the way. Yes, Steve.
So I'm curious. In this entire story arc, there's a lot of, I'm going to say, story repetition. Meaning, as an example, Paro has a dream. He repeats it.
Okay.
Yosef has dreams. They get repeated, etc. But here, Yosef has a conversation with his brothers. And then all it says about that conversation when the brothers came back to Yaakov is he told them what happened.
Right, yeah. So why is that? That's your question.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a lot of, like, that's probably why the Mefarshim struggle as to what Divrei Yosef are. Are Divrei Yosef that he's in Egypt? Are Divrei Yosef that they should come down there? Are Divrei Yosef the Egla, you know, the Halachos of Egla Rufa? Yeah, it is a lot more vague than a lot of the other parts of our story. I hear. Yeah, I don't know. It's a good point. I don't have a good answer, but it seems like the Mefarshim are certainly bothered on some level by the ambiguity of that phrase.
And also, you know, even though, I mean, the psukim that you're showing us, Paro telling, you know, saying, you know, take the agalot, is there maybe like a prior conversation that almost like maybe Yosef put that idea in his, you know, in his mind, so he would offer it?
I mean, it's possible. I don't think there's any indicator of that. Okay. So I think then,
because what I'm thinking is that as much as it might, you know, Egalarufa Agalot is a play on words. Maybe he, you know, Yosef was trying to send a veiled message that would not, you know, if anyone's hearing the message, you know, to the outside world, oh, this is, you know, Magen's moving, this makes sense. But he was sending a specific message to his father that only his father would have understood it, given the given the context of everything. So when the brothers told Yaakov what happened, you know, maybe they were repeating, you know, what Yosef, you know, the story that Yosef was providing, so that Yaakov would understand that.
Right. So I think that that's probably what Rashi is saying, and I think the Chizkuni also is that the Agalot, that was like the secret. That even the brothers might have been carrying that message, but they didn't understand like how profound that message was, which is why like they're telling their dad he's fine and he's all this and he's all that, and none of it brings back his spirits until he sees the agalot. I mean, I also, like, I don't know, this is probably like a little bit tongue in cheek, but Vayar agalot asher shalach Yosef laseitoto, right? His his father sees the agalot that Yosef sent. So I think, like, you know, I sometimes, right, like our parents or our family views us in a way that's a little bit more inflated than the reality, right? Like I remember once my grandmother introduced me to all of her friends in the assisted living home that she was living in. And she introduced me as I'm the rabbi of West Hempstead. I'm like, I'm definitely not the rabbi of West Hempstead. I'm like, you know,
you're a rabbi, you're of West Hempstead.
Right. But like from my grandmother's perspective, like there is nobody else, you know, in West Hempstead, you know, as much as my grandson. But, you know, Yaakov also, when he sees the agalot, like, and he hears that Yosef is, by the way, he's told he's the Moshel B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim. That's more than just the Mishnah Lamelech. Also, oh, that's my Yosef. My Yosef took care of me, that kind of thing. Which again, it could be. I actually think that the Netziv, although we'll probably spend the least time on this answer of everything we've done tonight, it is probably the best answer of all. He says, Torach Rav Kazeh, Ein Lachush L'Sheker. If you're lying, there's a lot of things that you do to, you know, kind of like prove that you're, you know, telling the truth, but you're not going to hire 10 wagons, you know, to show up at someone's door, like ad kedei kach, you're not going to do. You might, you know, you want to give off the air that you're more important. You might dress up in a fancier suit. There's a lot of things that you might do. Are you gonna, like, you know, rent 10 limousines, 10 moving trucks, and pull up behind, you know, at someone's house just to show them, you know, that you're someone who you're not really? It's not going to happen. If you actually do that, that shows that you truly are as wealthy as you, you know, try to, you know, be. So I think, again, it's not a it's not a very deep answer, but I think it's a very simple answer that I think helps a lot. All right, so the Kliyakar. The Kliyakar, actually, we won't take a look inside because there's still several more answers that I want to discuss, and it's getting a little bit late. But the Kliyakar basically says that Yosef actually accompanied them when they left Egypt, some of the road back to Egypt. And he, when he's walking with them, what does he do? He tells them the laws of Egla Rufa. And when he tells them the laws of Egla Rufa, they then share that with their dad, that they were accompanied by their brother. And that's when they, when their dad realizes, this actually is a special person. It must be Yosef. Okay. Three more answers. So Rav Zevin...
I'm gonna have to leave in about a minute or two. I have to go pick up
something
from the train, but I apologize in advance.
Okay, thank you. It's at the 30-minute mark, so you just have to, like, you know, listen to the last 5 minutes when it's posted. So Rav Zevin offers the following. He says that the Egla Rufa, what's the message of Egla Rufa? Is that there's a ripple effect for our actions. When I do something, there's something that continues to come out of it for a long time. So Yosef wants to let his dad know that for the last 22 years, I listened to the message of the ripple effect of things. And as a servant in Egypt, or as someone living in Egypt, a non-Jewish country, I went out of my way to make sure that the ripple effect of my actions was carefully guarded. So I wouldn't do anything wrong. Okay, so that's another possibility. And that's why his father feels better. Second to last answer, Rav Yosef Nechemia Kornitzer says that the at Egla Rufa, we end off by saying, Kaper na le'amcha Yisrael asher padita. So please forgive the Jewish people that you have redeemed. We talk about Egypt. Why do we talk about Egypt? Because in Egypt, we were saved, right? God saves us even though we did not have any zchus of our own to do it. But God saves us because of the potential that's within us. Yosef says to his father, listen, I might not be good enough for you. It's true. But I ask you to come down to Egypt and see my family because of my family's potential. So even if I don't have any value, come on my behalf. Okay, so that's the second, that's another answer. But I want to share with you the last answer. It's the second answer that Rabbi Riskin gives. He quotes Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, who I believe taught in YU at the time when Rabbi Riskin was there. And he gives the following example. He says, imagine a son leaves his parents' home and he goes to the big city. And this is back in the day when going to the big city was synonymous with you were lost from Judaism. And the father is not really so much in touch with the son not so much in touch with the father. And after a few years, the son reaches out to the father and says, Dad, I want to get together. And the father is terrified. What is he going to find? He hasn't seen his son. He hasn't spoken to his son. He had no pictures, nothing. Oh my God, what could have happened to my son? What is he? He's concerned. And then the son says to the father, I want you to come to my house. Right? I want you to come. I'm sending you my chauffeur, my car, to come visit me. So when he sees that, the father is comforted because he realizes that if the son wants me to come to his house, he's proud to show me what his house is, which means that his value system is still consistent with the value system that he had in my own house. Rabbi Riskin says that that's actually what Yosef is. That's why Yaakov is so vayafag libo. What is he worried about? When maybe it's Od Yosef Chai. When it says Od Yosef Chai, Yosef is still alive. His concern is, yeah, Yosef is physically alive, but spiritually is he alive? Can you spiritually still be alive and at the same time rule over Egypt? Highly unlikely. His heart stops because he can't believe that that's possible. He feels it as a contradiction in terms. But when they tell him Yosef's words and he sees the wagons, and the wagons are saying, I want you not only to come visit me, but I want you to live by me. Yeah, we could put on a charade for a day or two if Yaakov comes down there. But to permanently live down there, the essence and the truth of who Yosef is going to become very clear. What Yaakov is saying to him, what Yosef is saying to him is, Dad, I am still the same Yosef that you said goodbye to all those years ago. And I want you to know that those agalot, again, according to this pshat, it's not egla arufa, but the agalot is the notion of come to live with me, is proof that he is still the Yosef that he was once upon a time, is still Yosef at Tzaddik. And that, says Rabbi Riskin, is a possibility of it. And that's probably why Yosef, it says that Yosef sent the wagons. Although they might have been al piparo, the message of live with us, we're going to be together, that wasn't Paro's doing, that was Yosef's message. And Yosef's message is, I haven't changed. So again, all different possibilities of how to look at the agalot.